I'm Mina Kim from KQED in San Francisco.
And I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne from WHYY in Philadelphia. Welcome to America Amplified, Life, Community, and COVID-19. We're teaming up with public radio stations across the country to talk about how life has changed because of the pandemic.
This hour, we're talking about face masks. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends everyone wear a mask when out in public to curb the spread of COVID-19, and more than a dozen states require it, especially at essential businesses, hospitals, or when riding public transit.
But the mandates have been met with a mix of reactions ranging from applause to anger, even violence. What comes up for you when you wear a mask, or when you see other people wearing a mask, or when they're not wearing a mask? Tweet us at Amplified2020.
Joining us now is Seema Yasmeen. She's a public health doctor and epidemiologist, and she's director of the Stanford University Health Communication Initiative. She served as an officer in the Epidemic Intelligence Service at the CDC, and she's the author of a new book, Muslim Women Are Everything: Stereotype Shattering, Stories of Courage, Inspiration, and Adventure. Dr. Yasmeen, welcome to America Amplified.
Thank you so much for having me and for having this important conversation.
So just to begin, can you clarify where the CDC falls on masks, on face masks today? Because, of course, initially the agency and other public health officials even were not recommending them.
That's right. And there was this one dramatic week where the CDC did an about turn. First, it was saying that you didn't really need to wear masks unless, of course, you were caring for somebody who was sick and if you were a frontline worker who was being exposed to lots of people. And then we got this guidance as well as these tutorials and videos about how you should be fashioning your own cloth mask at home. And this was met with confusion just because the information was changing so quickly. And also by some scientists with some consternation that there was evidence that cloth masks may not be very effective and might give people a false sense of security about exactly how much protection they have. And you always worry about that false sense of security that people might start to leave their home more, might start to congregate more. The important thing to know now is that there are CDC recommendations, but you also need to look at what's happening in your community. Your county, your city even, might have different guidance based on where you live and what kind of activities you're doing. So CDC is recommending that you wear a mask when you leave your home, and some places, some cities and counties, are mandating that you wear a mask. And this is a really troubling issue for many people for whom it doesn't feel safe. I'm talking to Muslim women, to Black people who are making these really careful calculations about, well, I want to stay safe and I don't want to get infected and I don't want to expose others, but it doesn't feel safe to some people to cover their face because of how they are viewed, how they are othered by members of their community.
Yes. And I want to dig into that so much more over the course of this hour. One of the things when, as you say, people are making that calculation because wearing a mask can mean so many different things. Can you tell us, are they effective at least at slowing the spread of the coronavirus, at slowing the spread of COVID-19?
So it completely depends on what kind of mask you're wearing and how you're wearing it. So much of it is to do with the user behavior. Are you putting the mask on properly? Are you taking it off carefully? I think by now we've all seen people who are wearing masks that don't even cover their nose. And so I'm really going back to that idea of this false sense of security. What the data tells us at the moment is that even if you wear a cloth mask, it's, you know, far from ideal, it's not a surgical mask or an N95 respirator, the thinking is that by having a cloth mask when you leave your home, and hopefully you're only leaving for essential purposes, that it keeps your germs in. So wearing a cloth mask is much more about protecting other people from yourself than it is about stopping you from becoming infected.
Dr. Yasmeen, this is Marty Moscow-Wayne in Philadelphia. What do you suggest? And I think all of us have been out and we see people wearing masks correctly, incorrectly. Some of them are beautiful homemade masks. Some of them looks like someone just tied a rag around their face. But what do you suggest we say to someone if we see they're not wearing a mask or perhaps not wearing it correctly?
So I really worry about the way that people police others. And I think about the fact that you don't know from looking at somebody if they are autistic, for example, and people with autism can really struggle and have sensory differences that make it difficult for them to cover their face, even portions of their face. Somebody might have a medical exemption from wearing a mask Again, you can't tell from looking at somebody if they have a breathing condition that prohibits them from covering their face. And it's advised that young kids and people with chronic breathing difficulties don't wear a mask. That could actually exacerbate their issues. And I want to take some of the onus away from personal behavior. I know that might sound strange, me saying that as a public health physician, but I do worry about this idea that even with the press, we're seeing all these photos of people at the beach congregating in bars. It's really frustrating to see that, for sure, especially if you're somebody who's been sheltering in place for 2 months or longer. But we have been sheltering in place, upending our lives, some people closing their businesses. Also, we could flatten the curve. That was the whole point of this, right? The idea was to buy time. And the whole idea of that time was to allow states, local, and federal governments the opportunity to put into place the tracing, testing, and isolation measures that were needed. Where is the scrutiny of that? Like, we need to keep asking that question too. So even I get very frustrated seeing people packed on the beach, but I want us to remember that, yes, we're doing our personal part to protect public health, but we need the governments and the lawmakers to do their part too, not to rush to reopen, for example.
You're listening to America Amplified. We're talking about face masks, the tension over face masks, people's experiences with face masks. And we've got calls coming in. I'm going to start with Jason in Tucson, Arizona. Hi, Jason.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
So I teach high school, and one of the things that has not been addressed is how we are to treat students who may not have access to or the belief in wearing a mask, and if we're supposed to deny them from education in the formal setting, because we've just been told that we are returning to school in August with business as usual, which means overly packed classrooms.
So it sounds like you're saying that you haven't gotten guidance from your district about whether or not you should require students, or are they asking you to require students to do this?
There has been no guidance so far.
But you would like to see that happen? You'd like to see your students wear them?
We would like to see, yes, absolutely, and any other PPE measures that we should be taking or measures as far as cleaning our classrooms between classes, and the lack of transparency and leadership has been drastic.
Seema Yasmeen, what's your advice for Jason here?
Yeah, I share that frustration. It just comes back to that point I made a minute ago about what is the government doing to protect us? And even at that Senate Health Committee hearing earlier this week, if you can think back, so I think it was Tuesday, there were senators there, I think Senator Murphy from Connecticut, who was kind of drilling the CDC director and saying, my state's looking to reopen schools. Can you give us guidance and when will we get it? And the CDC director was kind of prevaricating, really vague. And there's this frustration that the government's holding out on giving the kind of day-to-day granular guidance that we really need to know that we can go back to school and work safely. We did see the CDC 17-page report with all that guidance be shelved by the White House. Now it has been published, but there's been a lot of criticism about these kind of decision trees, if you've seen that graphic, of what schools need to have in place in order to reopen. So lots of criticism about what's actually feasible versus what's in the guidance. But I think it's a really important point that Jason makes about access, because what good is it telling people you need to disinfect your home a lot, you need to disinfect schools a lot, you need to wear a mask? People just don't have access to those basics. So I think it's going to come down to doing lots of organizing and making lots of decisions on a community level. The federal government, it feels, has left lots of people high and dry. And then even when the guidance is given, it may not be feasible for many people.
And you're listening to America Amplified. We are talking about face masks. And let me get Mary from Rome, Georgia, to join us on America Amplified. And Mary, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. How are you? Go ahead.
Good. On the 14th, I was driving, and I was stopped by the highway department. And I asked why I was stopped. Was I doing something wrong? And the officer stated that it's because of my children that they were a different race than me. And I find that odd. And I said, well, reason why is, you know, two of them are adopted and one was born natural. and why would you feel that you would stop me? And he stated, because I was the only one wearing a mask and my children were not.
Wow. What happened after that? Did your explanation work? Did he let you go?
No, actually. I actually had to get a birth certificate for my youngest one because we're a weird family. I have grown children ranging from 24 to a one-year-old. And wow. So, therefore, we had to get my mother-in-law to fax the birth certificate for the youngest one to my phone. After that, he was satisfied, but it was like he was not satisfied.
I hear you, Mary. I really appreciate your call to Radio Times. And Dr. Yasmin, it sounds like because there isn't an agreed on regulation related to a face mask that we can run into situations like Mary did.
Right. And there have even been places where Black people have been pulled out of a store and told off by a police officer for wearing a mask. And then the police chief has said, oh, actually, those officers were wrong. We do encourage people to wear masks. So the way that people of color, the way that parents of Black children are being policed now is very different to the way that white people are being policed. And we've seen this before in previous epidemics and previous crises in general, that early on you can see additional measures and power being given to officials and people in authority. And those can really heighten fear and anxiety amongst communities of color, amongst immigrants, because of harsher policing. So I really worry about this, and just that sometimes it's a formal way in which authorities are given more power. Sometimes it's more subtle, and the police just feel even more emboldened to pull over Black people.
We're talking this hour with Dr. Seema Yasmin. She's a public health specialist and epidemiologist at Stanford University. We're talking about the tension over wearing face masks, and we'd like you to join the discussion. When you wear a mask or when you see other people wearing a mask, what comes up for you? Have you ever been treated badly because you wore one, or maybe because you were not? Tweet us at Amplified2020. We'll be right back. This is America Amplified. I'm Mina Kim from KQED, joined by Marty Moscoing at WHYY in Philadelphia. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Mina Kim from KQED in San Francisco.
And I'm Marty Moscoing from WHYY in Philadelphia. This is America Amplified Life, Community, and COVID-19. We're talking this hour about the tension over wearing face masks in public. And wherever you are, we want to hear from you. Do you routinely wear a mask in public? Do you not wear a mask in public? Tell us why and why not. Have you had hostile stares or even angry reactions when wearing a mask in public or not wearing a mask in public? Tweet us at Amplified2020. First, we checked in with a few folks from Nebraska City to San Francisco to find out where they land on this issue.
Hi, my name is Brian Connor. I live in Nebraska City. The masks do not do pretty much anything, and it actually probably hurts you more than it helps. We're being led astray, I think most people are, because they watch the news. I don't watch the news. I don't live my life in fear. I go out and I live my life. I work every day, take care of my kids.
My name is Liz Fletcher. I live in Oklahoma City. My husband has cystic fibrosis, so we are deeply familiar with the need for communal infection control measures like mask wearing. Wearing masks isn't an act of allegiance to a political ideology. It's not about shaming or ostracizing. It's just a simple act of kindness.
I'm Sarah Liss from Middletown, Connecticut, and I'm autistic. Face masks are kind of a problem for me. I really don't like the feel of linen on my face. It's even more constricting when the carbon dioxide that I'm breathing out doesn't have anywhere to go, and I have to breathe it in again. Then it's all in, confining, and I don't like that so much.
I'm Robert Laborde, and I'm a power plant boiler operator in a hospital in Oklahoma City. I use masks every day. I've always found them uncomfortable. Sure, we miss the freedoms we had before, but this is one of those times that we need to do things, even if we do not like to do them.
Hello, my name is Monique Kobinger, and I live in North Beach, San Francisco. Probably one of the first times I wore a mask in public, and I had bright blue gloves and my spray of disinfectant, immediately caught the attention of two younger women who really laughed at me. As an African-American Latina woman with autoimmune issues, I just started seeing the disproportionate mortality rates of people of color in this country. I did not want my children to see me in that situation.
That audio diary came to us from our coordinating producer, Andrea Tudhope. This is America Amplified, and we are talking about wearing face masks and some of the complicating factors for some people. And looks like we have some phone calls. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we do. And actually on the line is Mayor Will Joyce from Stillwater, Oklahoma. He was forced to amend a requirement to wear face masks at stores and restaurants after the requirement was immediately met with aggression and threats. Will Joyce, thanks for joining us on America Amplified.
Thanks for having me.
And tell us what happened. I mean, how quickly after making this proclamation that employees and customers at businesses that were reopening wear masks, how quickly did the problems begin?
Well, pretty quickly. We put that into place when our state moved into phase one of its recovery on May 1st. And that Friday morning, our orders around asking folks to wear masks in stores went into effect. And really, you know, sort of early Friday morning, we started to get a couple of phone calls from store managers and owners just saying, hey, our employees are kind of getting, I don't know about aggression and threats. It was, you know, a few people who were mean who kind of said, well, I'm not wearing one, and kind of pushed past or things like that. It wasn't an armed protest like you've seen in some of these other places, but certainly some concern from store owners that first thing that morning that people were reacting certainly rudely and sometimes aggressively towards masks.
Yes, I saw the reports that it was described as rudely and aggressively, and that even you at City Hall did hear from someone who said that they would use their Second Amendment rights to resist this. Did that happen?
We did, yeah. We got a call, an anonymous phone call to our police department, actually, along those lines. So it was fairly quick that people pushed back.
What do you think contributed to the reaction that you got to this requirement?
I think a few things. I think, as Dr. Yasmin was saying earlier, there's not a consistent approach, I think, even statewide, nationwide, around how masks should be used. And so there's a lot of folks with differing views, and it's difficult to kind of to present a unified message so that everybody understands why and what we're trying to do and why that would have been in place. And I think, you know, just in our community, there are, you know, a number of folks who feel like it's a particular issue of rights and constitutionality, and they felt like it was, something they shouldn't be asked to do. And we heard, you know, quite a bit of that kind of feedback that you know, you can't force people to take these kinds of precautions.
And what made you decide to then turn the requirement into a recommendation? Was it concern over safety, or was it something else?
You know, really, it was the question of having our, you know, store employees in our town, you know, having to try to enforce that on their own, right? Or to try to, you know, send police to all these different locations to enforce it for them. Neither of those is a really viable option. And from our standpoint, you know, we certainly didn't want to put, frontline retail workers in a position where they were having to try to deal with folks who were going to object. And so it made most sense to us to modify that piece of it. Now, we still do require employees in all of those businesses to be wearing masks. It was just turned to a recommendation for their patrons to be wearing masks rather than a requirement.
Mayor, this is
how
Marty
are things
Musk.
Now? Sorry, go ahead, Marty.
Yeah, I was just going to say, this is Marty Moscowen in Philadelphia. How much then compliance would you say? You're a city of what, about 45,000? Is there any way to know how many people are complying with masks?
No, I mean, other than anecdotally, if you go out and go to Walmart to buy groceries or go to the barber shop, that sort of thing. I mean, in my experience, it's more than 50%, but not a whole lot more. It's definitely not something where you feel like, oh, most people here are wearing masks. I think that's probably consistent throughout our area, that it's around 50-50 that you see people actually wearing them in public.
And just one last question, Will Joyce. Can you just tell us a little bit more about Stillwater? I mean, a lot of symbolism has been attached to these masks, especially political symbolism. Do you think that's the case in Stillwater?
I think it is for some people, for sure. Stillwater is a college town, so we're about 50,000 people, the home of Oklahoma State University. And we're about an hour from both Tulsa and Oklahoma City. So we're not a suburb. We're sort of the largest town in our county and in our area. And as a college town, a little bit of a different feel than you might find in rural communities our size other places. I think there are some folks who really, philosophically and politically feel that it's an issue that they shouldn't be, forced to do. But for the most part, our community's been really supportive in terms of decision making, in terms of why, what we've put in place. We were very early in shutting down here in Stillwater, and that's, it's been something that the community has supported very well overall.
Well, Mayor Will Joyce of Stillwater, Oklahoma, really appreciate having you on today. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And you're
And you're
listening.
listening. Yeah.
Go ahead, Mina.
You're listening to America Amplified, and we're talking about face masks. Want to know what your experience is? And this is reminding me, if you're a business owner or employee who tried to enforce a face mask rule, tell us what happened. Also, of course, are you comfortable wearing a mask? Why or why not? Tweet us at Amplified 2020.
Let's get Joyce from Tucson, Arizona, to join us on America Amplified. And Joyce, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, hi, thank you. So I think there's an overarching issue that will take a while to address of real mental health in this country. But, because there's an aggressive attitude among too much of the population. I'm hearing that somebody would threaten somebody, with Second Amendment rights. I mean, it's really nuts. I wear a mask. I may not necessarily be comfortable doing it, but I'm certainly happy that I can do it. And I was in a big box store the other day with my mask. I was in a fairly narrow aisle. There was a group of people. I was probably 6 feet away. The man of the group coughed, and he wasn't wearing a mask. And I turned around and looked at him, and he didn't look at me, but I think he understood my look. And they moved away, and I moved away, and I certainly didn't want to move into the area where he had just coughed. I don't know how we overcome either ignorance or arrogance or just an aggressive underlying attitude, and it is scary. We can't police other people, but what do we do? I don't have to go to a bar where people are intentionally congregating with, risky behavior like that, but, there are places where people behave that way, and it's so inappropriate.
Well, Joyce, let me see what Dr. Seema Yasmeen has to say. And Dr. Yasmeen, what should someone like Joyce do?
Well, I'm so grateful, first off, to Joyce for raising that issue, because I think as much as we're focused on this contagion of an infectious disease, in my opinion, there's also a mental health epidemic happening right now. Really high levels of anxiety, fear, depression, many of us grieving those we have lost. And even if you don't know somebody personally who's died or gotten sick from COVID-19, you're living in this state of grief because you're just seeing those numbers, those mortality numbers, go up and up and up. And I'm really concerned that with that sole focus on a virus, we're not thinking about the mental health impact of the virus. And society in general has not been great at addressing mental health issues, talking about anxiety and depression. There's still so much stigma. And it reminds me in general how so much of this pandemic response has been deeply ableist. That now that many of us are feeling anxious, all of a sudden we do want to have more conversations about anxiety and depression. makes me think about the contrast between what Brian said and Liz said in that segment earlier. Brian in Nebraska is saying a mask might hurt you. I don't live in fear. And Liz, who lives in Oklahoma City, is like, it's an act of kindness. You're doing it for other people. And because somebody in her family has cystic fibrosis, she lives with this constant fear about an infection causing very serious disease. So I agree with Joyce that, yes, you can't police people. You can't tell someone looking at somebody whether they have cystic fibrosis or autism or whatever reason they have for wearing or not wearing a mask. And in my opinion, from my experience investigating epidemics, it's really hard to protect public health efficiently if you don't have community buy-in. And I think right now there's this big divide between the mask wearers and the mask shunners, mostly because there's been so much confusion about what a mask does, who should wear it and when, which goes back to this broader frustrating issue about a lack of a coordinated federal response. On any given day, as a health journalist, I'm making sure that I have the regulations right. I look at what the CDC is saying. Has the CDC tweaked its guidance? I live in California, so I look at what the state is saying. I live in Santa Clara County, then I live in Palo Alto. So I'm looking at all these different layers of regulations, and it's mind-boggling and really difficult to understand. That's not good for community buy-in and not good for public health.
And it sounds like, Dr. Yasmin, that you're saying the consistency is what will be required to remove the symbolism that's been imbued upon the mask, because it has been...
And also because it's so framed as a personal issue that, yes, of course, you're putting on a mask, you're strapping it over your ears. It's very much a personal behavior. But guess what? You're not doing it for yourself. You're wearing a mask, as I think Liz said, as an act of kindness. It's a civic duty. By wearing the mask, you're keeping your germs in, and you're doing it much more for the kid that lives next door to you who has leukemia, or the person who lives opposite you who's elderly or who might be immunocompromised. So with public health, we're asking people to change very personal behaviors for the greater good. But in this instance, in this pandemic, we have not been very clear at communicating that to the public.
Dr. Yasmin, Mina and I were talking about the fact that even walking around our neighborhood, sometimes you can't recognize someone because you have to keep your distance. You also have a largely covered up face. And it's really just we have our eyes to communicate with each other because we don't have our mouth.
We're constantly reading our environment by looking at people's facial expressions, right? So then that impacts your emotional mood too. You can't see a friendly smile when you're walking down the road to the grocery store. But also I think about it from a medical perspective that with people with epilepsy, especially kids with epilepsy, sometimes they have facial signals that show they're about to have a seizure. And so if you're the parent of a kid with epilepsy who has seizures, you don't want your kid's face covered up because you need to see that, oh my goodness, they're about to have a seizure. So I think that also comes back to Joyce's point about not policing others. That, I think, only makes you feel reassured if you believe that everyone's buying into this issue, hasn't made masks a political issue, and realizes that we're doing it for the greater good.
Well, let me bring Carol into this conversation. Carol, in Overland Park, Kansas, you're on America Amplified.
Good afternoon.
Hi, go right ahead.
Yes, I was just calling in because I do have a breathing problem, and when I do go out, I have to carry an portable oxygen tank. I cannot wear a mask, and I feel like apologizing to people or having a sign on me that says, I cannot wear a mask. I would like to wear a mask because it's very embarrassing, and I've been denied going into the hospital where I need to see a doctor because I could not wear a mask.
Wow.
We're trying to work around that. So I just wanted to put that out there. It's just that there are some of us who would dearly love to wear a mask, but just cannot handle it. Thank you.
Carol, I'm so glad you remind us of that, as we were also reminded from the woman who was autistic in the audio diary talking about that as well. And there are medical exemptions, right, Dr. Seema Yasmin,
if you are
unable to do that?
Yeah, that's right. And also age exemptions too, that you shouldn't be putting masks on young children. And certainly if you're somebody like Carol who has a chronic lung condition, putting a mask on can actually, it's been proven, it makes it harder to breathe. So you don't want to exacerbate the issues. But this is back to that public health point, right? That me, you, Carol's neighbors, Carol's grocery store workers, we should all be wearing masks to protect Carol because Carol can't wear the mask. And that's what we're really trying to do, is it's personal behavior modification that's much more about protecting our neighbors and our community members than it is about protecting ourselves.
But I think what you're also saying, and what we're also hearing on today's show, is that given that wearing a mask can mean so many different things for so many different people, and it could be for medical reasons and other reasons, it's probably totally. Just best not to make assumptions when we're
Absolutely.
Engaging with others.
And also just
take some
remember,
of the heat out of it.
Yeah, I think assumptions in general are not a great idea. But also remembering that we're not talking about face masks in isolation. We're talking about using face masks in addition to other containment measures. So in an ideal situation, even if your state's reopening, which really makes me wince because I don't think anything should be reopening yet, you want to stay at home as much as possible. So you're only even wearing the face mask when you're going out, which hopefully isn't much at all. And it is, there's a lot of hypocrisy in the guidelines too. You think about places in the States where there are lots of Muslims, where they don't feel safe going outside covering their face because it might be assumed that they are demonstrating their Muslimness, that they might be a Muslim woman who wears a hijab and now it looks like she's wearing a niqab as well. And we're seeing that in France, where Muslim women are fined for covering their face if it's deemed to be for religious reasons. And they can also be fined for not covering their face.
Right. Well, let me jump in here, Sima Yasmin, and just remind our listeners, we'll be right back. This is America Amplified.
Welcome back. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen from WHYY in Philadelphia.
And I'm Mina Kim from KQED in San Francisco. This is America Amplified, Life, Community, and COVID-19. We're talking this hour about people's experiences with face masks. And there's still time for you to join the conversation. Tweet us at Amplified2020.
Now, the CDC and our guest, Dr. Sima Yasmin, says that we should all wear face masks when we're out in public to prevent the spread of coronavirus, both protecting ourselves and the people we come in contact with. While for some that is a no-brainer, for others, especially for African-American men, wearing a mask comes with its own set of dangers and history. Joining us now is journalist Chris Norris. He's a colleague of mine here at WHYY, where he is the community engagement coordinator. He's also a professional drummer. And Chris, nice to have you with us on America Amplified.
Good afternoon, Maria. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. What kind of mask do you wear out in public, Chris?
I have three, actually. I have one mask that kind of looks like I'm in the Mortal Kombat video game. I have another that that has a African print on it. And then I have another one that has a face shield on it. But it's impossible to use the face shield one because when you breathe, it fogs it all up. And it's just not practical.
Are those three different kinds of masks based on where you're going, what you're doing?
Not necessarily. Well, no, I guess, yeah. One of them has really kind of ventilators in the nose, and I bike about 14 miles a day. And so it's good if I'm on the bike, but I typically will not wear a mask when I'm doing my bike. If I'm getting off the bike and going into a market, I'll have one of the three of those masks with me.
For someone...
But the one with the ventilator, it makes it easier to breathe.
I'm curious, and one of the reasons we wanted to have you on the show, because we are talking about masks and their various meanings, how people wear them, the kind of reactions that people sometimes get for wearing them, and specifically about African-American men wearing masks. And I'm just curious whether, when you put on your mask, do you think twice about going out in public?
I don't. Specifically, but I understand the sentiment of those who do. I also make, you know, types of adjustments so that I don't feel uncomfortable. I know how to communicate with my eyes. I know how to smile with my eyes if it's necessary when I'm walking into a walking into a grocery store. But again, as your previous guest said, I'm literally only putting the mask on when I have to walk into the market, which I try to do, you know, once or twice a week, and then that's it. But I have spent, you know, a good part of 10 years covering and writing about the black male experience in America. And so I understand why this this quick adjustment to have to put on a mask can not just be, anxiety inducing for some Black men, but it can be traumatic because of how they were socialized. So, for example, on the block that I grew up in South Philly, at the corner bodega, there was a sign, and I'm sure many who have lived in similar neighborhoods have seen this sign that says "No hoodie, no mask." Wow. You know, and you grow to understand that the mask and the hoodie, for whatever reason, has become signs of criminality, and so you begin to understand that, and you begin to adjust, and then overnight you're told, well, hey, I need you to put a mask on, and you have to wear it when you go into these stores. And so it becomes not a precaution for people, but a burden, you know, for the segment that we're talking about. And so, you know, and as much as I like to believe, you know, we're all in this together, and it's a great messaging for this moment, it's just not true. You know, when we have these types of conversations and when we say things like we're all in this together, we dismiss the fact that there are still true disparities, both socially and culturally, that are being exacerbated by this moment.
Well, I'm thinking about that bodega with that sign, no masks, no hoodies. But here we are with a pandemic, a public health crisis, and we are asked to wear masks. Does it feel, not just for you, but for other Black men, as if there are risks associated with that?
With wearing a mask? Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, for many, the mere presence of a Black man for some people in this country is a looming threat. So now you obscure that Black man's face for whatever reason, and the perception of the threat increases, and so there's a likelihood that that Black man will encounter the police. And I think that many Black men want to decrease the probability that they will encounter the police. And so when you put a mask on as a Black man, you know, I may not feel, me personally, may not feel totally uncomfortable when I go out, but when I bought my new mask, it took about a month to get in, and it, like I said, it covers the face and the nose and kind of looks like a Mortal Kombat, you know, kind of a Mortal Kombat mask, and I was going to the market and I had my Black hoodie on, and I looked in the mirror as I was standing there, and I said to myself, I look scary. I can see why someone would be threatened by me.
Wow.
And I couldn't believe that I was saying that, you know, but I had to be objective and look at myself and go, how do I go out dressed like this because this is necessary and still not, what can I do to soften my approach? I'm 6'3", I'm 215, and now I have to add on a mask, you know? So yeah, those types of thoughts absolutely happen.
Chris, this is Mina from KQED. I mean, you're bringing up so much in terms of what it means to add a mask to an already existing prejudice against Black men, as you say, right, as being more threatening. And you're talking about having to do things to try to avoid being racially profiled. I mean, you're reminding me of an article that I read in the Washington Post about a man who tries to wear pastel colored masks because it's a softer color. He doesn't want to be perceived as threatening. And it just feels like as I'm listening to you, that this just feels like another thing for you to deal with.
Just it like is. Another I, layer. It's and, interesting and you say that and frame it that way. Yeah, because I think the mask has become an added handicap. You know, that's for a lot of people. I feel like it's an added handicap. But I want to be clear, though. I don't think the problem for black men isn't the mask per se. It's the way America views and treats them. The mask is just another symptom and another example of the conditions, the social conditions that are the reality for Black men. So if it's not the mask, it's the hoodie. If it's not the hoodie, it's the sagging pants. You know, there will be something that society will pick out and label criminal. And give the air of suspicion to, and then Black men will have to work to mitigate that on their own.
Chris, we're talking with Chris. We're talking with Chris Norris, professional drummer and journalist, WHYY's community engagement contributor and editor, and with you, our listeners. And let's take some calls, Marty.
Sure. And in fact, we have Vincent from, looks like Orlando, Florida, to join us on America Amplified.
Hi
Vincent. Go ahead. Absolutely. Go ahead.
Well, my comment is I work in the medical field. I'm a medical courier, and wearing masks is part of our everyday life now. And, you know, we've all been properly told how to wear masks and how to keep them or not wearing them. But every day I go out, or have to go out, should I say, I see people wearing masks in their personal vehicles and, you know, wearing it under their noses. And it goes back to what your expert was saying. We have no clear guidance on how we're supposed to be using this material to keep us safe. So, you know, it's great that we're talking about all this and all these great points, but we really need some guidance out to the general public to, you know, to tell them how to be using this PPE.
I think that's such a great point. And actually, we want to take more calls, but just really quick, Seema Yasmeen, just tips for how to use and care for a mask to ensure the best protection.
Absolutely. So you want to cover your nose and your mouth. It's not okay to have it below your nose. You're trying to protect those entry points for the virus, which also include the eyes. Obviously, you're not putting a mask over your eyes. You want to make sure that you're treating the outside of your mask as potentially contaminated at all times. So put it on when your hands are clean. And then when you're taking it off, be careful not to touch that front part, and then wash your hands carefully afterwards. Unfortunately, because we are in a situation where the country is not providing every citizen with the kind of mask that we should have, which is surgical masks at minimum, people are having to use and reuse homemade cloth masks. So it's important that you're washing them and tumble drying them regularly. I do think this is a really important point to raise, though, in terms of access. Conversations I've had with family members who are Muslim and who wear the hijab, with friends who are Black, is that there's an added fear about wearing something that looks like it could be nefarious. It would be easier if people had access to surgical masks, because then for those of us doing those careful calculations about how feared am I, how likely am I to be seen as a threat, at least a surgical mask signals that it's a surgical mask, not potentially a bandana or some way that a person is trying to cover their face.
Chris mentioned vented masks, Seema Yasmeen. Are those safe? I thought there were some warnings against those.
Yeah, I didn't want to butt in when Chris was talking, but yeah, there is some evidence that actually they can allow air to flow in a way that could be harmful. To me, though, I'm just really angry and really upset that people don't have access to the best kind of mask. I, as a public health physician, want everyone to have an N95 respirator. In a country that is as wealthy as America, that shouldn't be a barrier. The CDC shouldn't be giving people tutorials on how to sew your own mask at home out of goodness knows what fabric. Mm. I think it's terrible that after the H1N1 pandemic 10 years ago, that the strategic national stockpile was depleted of those N95 respirators and wasn't stocked up again. And I think it's really important we keep making these points. Yes, we have to talk about masks. We have to talk about the fact that this is a collective experience. It's actually really different for Black people, really different for Indigenous people, scary for Muslim people. And the government is not doing its most basic duty, which is giving us the equipment that we need to stop the spread of this disease.
Well, let me go now to caller Casey in Loudoun County, Virginia. Hi, Casey.
Hi, I just wanted to ask a couple of things. Number one, when people are going out to public spaces like grocery stores and restaurants, are they not aware that those, although they are public spaces, they're still private businesses? So along the lines of setting up rules like no shirt, no shoes, no service, why is it not understandable that a company should be allowed to decide what's best for their in-house patrons, but also for their employees? I mean, I get to the point where people who don't want to wear masks, I think their right to not wear a mask really does end when my right and the right of my children to not be infected begins. So that was my question and my comment. And I'll say thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Casey. And I don't know, Seema Yasmeen, if you want to comment quickly on that, we would like to get to some more calls, but...
Of course, I think it comes back to the idea, though, that when there's been such a lack of clarity about when to wear a mask, how to wear a mask, and also just people being very confused because then the regulations vary from one business to another potentially, or might differ between their city and their county. So I do think a lot of it comes back to a lack of clarity about the most basic containment measures at the height of a pandemic, which is inexcusable.
Let me see what Joan from San Rafael, California has to say. And Joan, go ahead. You're on America Amplified.
Hi. Since it's been proven that masks most importantly protect others from a wearer's possible asymptomatic carriage of the virus, the protocol of wearing masks should be universal. Leadership is needed. Every time the president is on TV or in public, he should be wearing a mask. If he doesn't, his base won't, and if people don't follow proven medical protocols, they're unwillingly jeopardizing everyone else beside themselves.
I hear that passion in your voice, Dr. Yasmin. You want to respond to that?
Yeah, I think leadership, unfortunately, hasn't even modeled the most basic behavior of how we should be protecting ourselves and each other. So we've seen White House press conferences where masks aren't worn, but even worse, there doesn't seem to be physical distancing. There's one person after another going up to the same podium, touching the same microphone without disinfecting it or washing their hands and then touching their face. All of it really bad public health messaging. And I think that further confuses the public about, wait, so I'm supposed to stay at home and not touch my face and I should wear a mask and physical distance, but the top officials aren't doing that. It sends a really bad message.
And again, the phone number, if you want to join the conversation, 800-444-8652, the Twitter handle at Amplified2020. And let me go to Emily in Collegeville, Pennsylvania.
Hi. How are you guys?
I'm well. Go right
We're
ahead.
Good.
So I'm a global epidemiology student at the University of Michigan, Go Blue, and I'm especially interested in social epidemiology. So my question for you is, what can we learn from cultures using masks pre-coronavirus, such as for air pollution, and how do you see American face mask culture shifting here in the U.S.?
Well, Dr. Yasmin, I mean, I know that in many nations in Asia, wearing a mask is pretty normal. It's a pretty everyday occurrence. Do you think that we will get to the point where the U.S. will be that way? And what should we look to as a model, do you think?
So I don't know how long-lasting behavior changes might be. And also because here we've seen that really stark anti-mask protest movement, anti-shelter-in-place movement. I do think it's really interesting that there are communities, specifically Asian communities, that have modeled this behavior for a long time, and they've been othered. I live in the Bay Area. There are lots of Asian communities here, and people might look askance at somebody who was wearing a mask previously, and now things have changed. I think there's a lot to learn from other communities, certainly a lot to learn from other countries about dealing with a pandemic, about better public health messaging, for example. Unfortunately, what happens in the U.S. is American exceptionalism. So we heard Vice President Pence say this early on. Back when there was a problem with the testing kits here in March, journalists said, why don't you just take the masks from the World Health Organization? They've given them to dozens of countries. And the response came back, because we're America. We are the infectious disease leader of the world. And clearly we've seen that's not true. We're leading right now with the deaths, not with any kind of progress. So I hope, and my hope is, that we do carry on public health behaviors that protect everybody. We have paid sick leave, for example. We're more mindful of our neighbors and colleagues who have chronic conditions and are immunocompromised. But I worry that this kind of pride and hubris will get in the way of our learning.
Let me see if I can get just one more caller on the air before we have to say goodbye. This is Arnie from O'Fallon, Missouri. Go ahead, Arnie.
Yes, thank you for having me. Sure. I live in St. Charles County, which is a population of 430,000 urban. It's an urban county just outside of St. Louis. And my experience is the county health director and county executive put into a plan the face masks are optional. And out in the stores and out in the public, I see 30-year-olds to 90-year-olds wearing masks and younger kids wearing masks. But the 20 to 30-year-old generation, they refuse to wear the masks. And I'm asking, I guess it's just kind of unusual. My question to your expert is that a problem of alarm to be worried about?
Dr. Yasmin, very quickly.
I want to be really careful about generalizing, though, because not all 20 to 30-year-olds behave in the same way. And certainly early on, we saw older adults who were actually more vulnerable to infection and more vulnerable to severe disease being dismissive about shelter-in-place orders. So that kind of pride or negligence or ignorance, whatever you want to call it, can strike us of all ages. I come back to the idea that this is not the great equalizer. We think of this as a global pandemic, but it's panning out very differently in different communities. If you're Black in America, you are 2 to 3 times more likely to die from COVID-19 than a white person. So I really want us to think about the personal behaviors that can protect those who are more vulnerable, to remember that this is not an equal experience for everybody. Sorry, go ahead.
good point to end on. Dr. Seema Yasmeen, public health specialist and epidemiologist at Stanford. That's all the time we have. Thank you for joining us this hour for America Amplified. Listen back to this episode at americaamplified.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's show was produced by Susan Britton and Debbie Builder. Special thanks to WABE in Atlanta and KCUR in Kansas City for working together to bring these voices from across the country to your public radio station. Thanks also to the team at America Amplified, a community engagement initiative supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Our technical director is Steven Steigman, and our coordinating producer and director is Andrea Tudhope. Our executive producer is John Hawes, and the conversation doesn't end here. Find us on Twitter at Amplified2020. I'm Nina Kim from KQED in San Francisco.
And I'm Marty Moskowain from WHYY in Philadelphia. This is America Amplified.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.